Wolf Hustle, from the South Branch Project to the Boardroom. At only 19 years old, Sinfarba ran with the Wolves of Wall Street. Growing up, she didn't know anything about the stock market, but she learned how to hustle from her immigrant parents, saving money so that she could one day escape her abusive father and poverty in the Bronx. Delighted to be joined to tell us all about what running with the Wolves was like. Sin herself, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, everyone. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to have us with you. You're in London this morning, I believe.
I am. So we lucked out. So I get to have a real morning talk with people, yeah.
Right.
Thank you for having me.
No, the pleasure is all mine. It's a fascinating background because if we think Wall Street, we tend to think, you know, it's a basic WASP environment, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant male who are based in Wall Street. Your background was somewhat different to your average market trader. Explain to me a little bit about how where you're actually from and how you ended up on Wall Street.
Yeah, actually, if you think Wall Street, actually, the description is still fits. You know, I haven't been on Wall Street in 25 years and nothing's changed. So I think that was an accurate description. And when I came into the scene, you know, so many years ago, I just thought I'd kind of do something different. And so, yeah, Wall Street was something I had never heard of. We didn't have internet when I was growing up. You know, anything you got was in print, radio, or on the news. And so my idea of Wall Street is what I had saw on the big screens, you know, going back to your description. And I never thought that there wasn't an opportunity for myself or anyone, you know, that looked like me. It just never occurred to me that I shouldn't try out to go on Wall Street. And so, you know, I just took that shot and, you know, made it and it went in and there I am.
I mean, I'm sitting obviously in a studio in southern Spain. I know New York, but the Bronx, again, I mean, I think the only thing I have in the Bronx is a movie called Fort Apache, the Bronx, about 40 years ago. So for those of us who don't know what the Bronx stroke South Bronx is like in the projects, just to explain a little bit about what it's like growing up there, because it's not an environment that you would think that you would people naturally would go into Wall Street, to put it mildly.
Well, yeah, it's pretty, you know, it's for marginalized. It's very poor people of color, you know, a lot of drugs, you know, crack epidemic was really rampant, heroin, you know, a lot of young mothers, you know, most people don't even graduate high school. I lived in a building where a 7-year-old girl got raped. It was that type of environment. It wasn't safe. It was just kind of where a lot of people immigrated originally. And when you're in these projects, you know, you have like, you know, families that are in one room, two rooms. And that's how I grew up. My parents immigrated from Haiti. The Bronx was kind of their first landing spot. And my mom always said, there's a way out. You know, you just have to have that passion and belief you can get out. And she had that kind of instilled in me. And so, you know, I was like, there's nothing I couldn't do.
Yeah. I mean, people say, yeah, you can find your way out. And that's, you know, so far very Disney movie, if you like. But it is to put that into practice when your basic mode is survival, never mind improvement or empowerment. You're just trying to make it through every day. So it must be very, was it difficult to motivate yourself? Because a lot of people just go, look, this is my lot. You know, I'm going to focus on keeping myself, my family, my loved ones secure and safe. Never mind trying to get out of this situation.
Yeah. So you're in survival mode every day. I mean, that's what it is. You're in survival mode and you have to be because of all the violence that is around you and all the things that you can pray to as far as like getting involved in drugs, getting involved in gangs, getting involved in all the things that will keep you there. My goal was to get out of there. And my mom's goal was to get us out of there. And so I think, you know, sometimes when you have that immigrant mentality, when you're coming to this, when you're coming to the USA and you're like, hey, I can make it here. You know, that was something my mom kind of just every day, like, we're going to get out of here. We're going to make it. And I knew that the only way to do that was to just kind of focus and figure out how to get out of here. And that was to make money. You know, you got to make money, you know. And so making money for me was just, how do I get there? And Wall Street was one of the ideas that I, you know, eventually landed on.
And how did you get, I mean, how did you, because I would imagine you obviously self-started, you're obviously driven, but what was the education like to get you? Because you can't just rock up on Wall Street and go, I have a, you know, look at me, I'm improving myself. I'm out of South Bronx, take me on. Because they would just laugh at, because there'd be millions and they just laugh at you. So how did you educate yourself? How did you get that first step to get out?
You know, I think for me, and it's always been, it's just besides having passion and, you know, being driven, networking. I was always a salesperson. I knew I could network my way onto Wall Street. And I did that without any education, actually. And I did it through a friend that was like, hey, I know you're such a great salesperson. Someone like you would be great on Wall Street. You know, and an opportunity came and I took it. And I didn't have that, you know, MIT background or that finance background. But what I had was that driven resiliency that they saw. And they were like, we want her, you know, working with us. And that's actually how I got onto Wall Street.
Isn't it always the case that if you go into a situation that perhaps you might not think that you are qualified for, but you know you've got what it takes, you have to back yourself. You have to believe in yourself. You have to say, yeah, I can do this, because as the saying goes, 95% of the world are winging it anyway. And so you're like, okay, I've got the confidence. They might have the suits and the background, but I've got myself and I believe in myself.
Well, to me, you know, I walked in thinking I was the advantage because I thought they didn't have my background. And that's what put me at the advantage, because the people that I saw had never had any of the or went through any of the things that I had went through. So I knew that I was a survivor. So, you know, walking onto Wall Street wasn't a big deal for me. You know, so that was my confidence. I thought I was the dark horse that would surprise everyone. And so when you grow up in these type of households and these toxic and turbulent type of situations, you feel like you can face anything. So dealing with a bunch of guys in suits wasn't something that ever intimidated me at all.
And had you gone literally straight from South Bronx into the Wall Street job, or had you been, because you said you were sales, you were marketing, you'd networked yourself there. Had you moved out of the, and with your mother, because your father was, as we say in Britain, England, a different kettle of fish, and he was abusive. So had you by that point got your mum out of South Bronx, or were you doing a commute in from South Bronx to Manhattan?
No, my mom was able to kick into, again, her survival mode and buy a home and get us out of the South Bronx in Queens, New York, and got rid of my dad. And so I got a job right out of high school selling eyeglasses, where I was making about equivalent to, you know, probably, I guess in euros would be about 45,000 euros a year, which was great at 19 years old, you know, and this was 25 years ago. So I was making good money then. And so I was always set my sights to do bigger and better. I'm like, if I could make this money, how much, you know, at 19, I could make a lot more money down the road. And, you know, at 19, I got that opportunity to work on Wall Street. I became the youngest Black female stockbroker then.
And for those who think that the stock markets are sort of swathed with mystery and finance and the whole thing, is it just another sales job, but it's just dressed up to make it sound to make it sound more important?
I mean, listen, you need education. I walked in there with no education on finances. So that's why I'm saying, if you have that belief and passion, you can do something, you can do it. And it is all of that. It is all of the numbers. I would not recommend you walk into Wall Street and think that you're going to be able to take some portfolio. Hey, listen, we could all get lucky. You know what I mean? And, you know, luck is great. And I work with luck. But for me, I was just like, listen, even if I don't know it, I'll still own it. And that confidence and that belief swayed investors to do business with me.
As you know, as we talked about disadvantages, but you know, as a woman of color in Wall Street, that 27 years ago, that level of prejudice against you must have been absolutely overwhelming. How did you handle that?
You know, I think the great thing is, as coming as a, again, parents from immigrants, I wasn't raised in a household where my mom said I was a Black woman. My mom always said I was a smart woman. And so I never felt that I was inferior. I never felt that I was, again, at the disadvantage. And all of that did come. Racism, sexism, misogyny. Yes, of course, that was all there. It was there every single day. But I chalked it up to their own insecurities. You know, I thought they were trying to take me off my game. And there was no way I was going to let anybody take me off my game. I was going to have success. So it didn't matter what anyone said to me.
So what was, I mean, is this a time, because obviously since the Wolf of Wall Street film, but I remember a book called Liar's Poker a while back, which,
right.
Yeah, the avocado, was it Guacamole Friday or stuff like that, where the, you know, the avocado dips would be ordered in and everybody just go crazy. What was the, it is that work hard, play hard. In this case, it's work like complete nutters and party like it's, as Prince would say, 1999 every night, basically.
Yeah, well, people, when they played hard, they played like tonight was their last day on the planet Earth. And so, yeah, it was everything. If you saw Wolf of Wall Street, nothing of that movie was sensationalized at all. I think there was so much more they could have added. And so that was my everyday life. You know, I had access, if I wanted to drugs. You have access to, you know, just what the gambling, you know, obviously there were, you know, we would have, you know, sex workers in our office. Those were, that was commonplace. That was my office scene. So, and you know what, the advantage for them was there was no internet, social media for all those things to be broadcast then. So we had that, you know, we had that privacy of all this stuff going on in our office and no one knew. It was just what we said. And that never made the print. So it never made radio. And so for it to come out so many years later and people like, oh, my God, that happened. I'm like, yeah, of course that happened. It's still going on to some degree.
One of the great things about being of our generation is the fact that there was no social media and
yeah, there was nothing
phones,
there.
So, yeah,
exactly. And I didn't have who was I going to complain to? We didn't even have a human resource department. So yeah. What was I going to say? I just played the game. You know, that's what you got to do. Sometimes you play the game to get to where you need to get. And then you can make and, you know, rock in every way you decide to go. But for me, I played the game.
How difficult is it to keep, I'm not going to get all esoteric on you here, but how to keep a moral compass when you're making to what everybody else would be in the same amount of money. You're in the Hamptons, you're buying Gucci handbags. You are making an obscene amount of money, but you're also losing a load of money and then you're making it back. How do you sort of ground yourself, Sin?
You know, what we were taught and what we were trained where everyone here was gambling with us. You know, it was their choice to come in and say, hey, we want to have this relationship with you. We know it's nothing is guaranteed. I needed to get paid for the things that I did. And to some degree, I entertained my clients. You know what I mean? They knew what they were and they loved that world when they loved the back and forth. They made money. They lost money. It was just part of what we did. And my moral compass is, you know, I'm here to work. I'm here to make money and I'm here to lose money. It was like one of those things you do, you know, it happens. I do it again. It was a great career. I had a great time. And I honestly think a lot of my clients had a great ride as well.
About 30 years ago, I used to hang out a lot in the city of London. And some of my great mates were currency brokers in the markets. And there was nobody over the age of 30, basically. You got to 35, you were gone because the burnout was so strong. Did you always have a game plan? Were you always aware that this is not going to be the rest of my life? I'm going to get in here. I'm going to do the Attila the Hun job. You know, I'm going to pillage, get as much as I can, and then get out.
You know, I always thought I was going to make my clients loads of money. And I'm like, one day I'm going to retire early. I'm going to do so well. And my goal was to be a pro golfer, actually. I'd taken up the game of golf while it was, you know, but and as a stockbroker, I'm like, hey, I got to learn how to play. I got to be, you know, to have a conversation with my clients. This is the way we do business. And so I thought I'd hang it up at some point and play golf. I gave myself, you know, a few years to be in the business. I thought I'd make loads of money for myself and I'd be in that position. But to be honest with you, the mental space that you need to do that business is beyond anyone. It's really hard to stay in that business, stay focused. I think most people will burn out after a while, or you just live with what it is. You make your choice. So I did it for 7 years. I had a great time doing it. But I wouldn't recommend it for most people.
And I mean, because as I said before, you know, a single woman of color in the markets, were you aware that you were making an inroad into, as I said before, a sort of a WASP dominated situation? Or are you just interested in just getting in there and getting out again and leaving your sanity intact, as it were?
I wanted to show people that it didn't matter what your background was. It didn't matter what your race was, how you identified. If you had that passion and belief, you know, they should share that same opportunity, you know, make it a place of equality. And I thought that I could do something different. I was going to come in as this Black woman that no one saw coming and do something remarkable and to land one of the richest football clubs in Europe at the time, at the age of 20 years old, was something no one ever saw coming. And so when I left that firm, I left with the largest client just a year and a half later that anyone that had been in that business for 10, 15 years had never been able to achieve.
And what's it like when the market's buzzing and it's going for it and it's going up? What's the adrenaline rush like if you're, because this is after open outcry, so presumably you're on your screen, you're shouting into phones. What's the buzz like in a big trading house when that's kicking off?
Yeah, it's still I can still feel that energy today. It never leaves. It's chaotic. It's frantic. I would pitch under my desk because it's so loud in the room. There's phones going across the room. There's people screaming and cursing. There's maybe a fight with two other brokers going on. There's sex workers coming in one area. There are people eating bagels trying to stuff down their food. They have, you know, it's just a frenzy of chaos of a couple of hundred people. It's damp. It's dark. It is where it is that you needed to be at that time to make success. And so, yeah, I could still feel it. And it's almost like this rush that I'll never get again in my lifetime. You know what I mean? So I appreciate that time there.
And so the book, Wolf Hustle. What was it like to sit down? Why the book now? And what was it like to sit down and remember those and go back to that time and put it all down? What was that like?
You know, I got to tell you, honestly, I saw my daughter. I have a 20-year-old now. When I started writing book, I think she was 18, 19. And I looked at her and she's, you know, obviously social media, it's a different generation. They're growing up where if you're not viral or you don't get a lot of likes, you know, you feel a certain way. And I'm like, whoa. I'm going to take you back to when I was growing up. You know, this is what I did. I put my head down. I took care of myself. I didn't worry about anyone else, you know, and I knew when to pick my head up. And I think for me, I wanted to show my kids, it doesn't matter how old you are. I'm in my 40s and I could still hustle. You guys got to figure out how to have success and make it out there. Learn a goddamn skill. You know what I mean? Like everyone's forgetting. You still got to have a basic skill. And for me, I wanted to show them like, look, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to make it go. I'm going to get someone to buy it. And I'm going to make a movie from it because I wanted to show them if you put your head to it, you could figure it out. And so honestly, you know, we're in a day of, you know, with people of color, there's so much racism. There's so much things that are now just kind of coming to the forefront. And then what happened with George Floyd, I wanted to show people there's another side. We can have success. We can win. We are winning differently. And in order to do that, I wanted to have some type of it imprint and a legacy after myself. So my daughter and my kids, you know, 50 years, 40 years can look back and say, hey, this is what mom did. So it was more to inspire people.
Yeah. And I suppose the other thing is to say, look, it's not a victim culture. We don't come to the surface. We don't get successful when something awful happens like Floyd. It's like, we've been doing this for centuries, but you haven't been picking up on it. And so therefore here's a book. I was doing this because this is completely under my radar seeing what you did, you know, until I saw the book and went, that's impressive. Yeah. And I should imagine, but you know, you being a parent are quite like, this is what we're going to do here. You know, follow me.
Yeah.
You know? And so when it comes to writing a book as well, it's like, this is what I did. You didn't make a big song and dance about it. We just got on with it. And that's perhaps the important thing about this book.
Exactly. I wanted to show that every time you do something, you need to learn how to reward yourself. You need to take, you know, you need to accept the small wins and not always look necessarily for the big wins. And you need to build that confidence by showing that you can do something. It doesn't have to be based on someone else's congratulating you necessarily.
And that's perhaps one of the things about the social media and the generation we have. But respect to them, right. They got through a pandemic, you know, and I don't know how we would have got through a pandemic when we were in our 20s without social media. And the internet. But at the same time, it seems to be, everything seems to be an instant hit, an instant rush, an instant like. Whereas if to get where you are today and what you've done, it wasn't about, I'm going to walk into Wall Street, they're going to fall at their feet and go, you're just brilliant. You've got to take those small steps and you've got to take those little wins along the way before you get the big victory.
No, it's about building relationships and everything you do. You need to build a relationship. You can't get that instant feeling of gratification every single time. And I think that's kind of the culture we're in now where we need that instant gratification. Don't get me wrong. I love it too. But I know to get those, you know, to have success, I need to be able to build towards that to make it sustainable. And that's all I was hoping to show my kids.
So the book, the process itself, did you write it yourself, get a ghostwriter? Did you sit down and go, I can do this? I was on Wall Street. This is a piece of what's it?
Listen, I wrote that book in 3.5 months. It was so easy because all I had to do was vomit the truth. That wasn't hard. You know what I mean? So that was so simple to me. And obviously you hear my tone now and you read the book, you understand that it matches. I don't need a ghostwriter to talk about the stuff that happened to me. Come on. I mean, that's ridiculous. But what I will say, I had a load of fun doing it, connecting with people 25 years that I hadn't spoken to and just reliving those moments with them, having conversations with them and just building something I felt that we could all be proud of together.
That must be something, getting in touch with people that you haven't got in touch for those days, like almost like the survivors of an air crash standing, going like, you're still standing. Wow, that's amazing.
I think they were super impressed that I was willing to do something again, to watch me have success in the business and just to be rooting for me. They were like, yeah, write the books and do it, you know, and just share what we all went through. And I'm like, of course. So, yeah, I think that was really fun, working on a second book as well now. And I hope that everyone that's reading it will understand that we can all do whatever we choose to do if we put our minds to it. That's really all I wanted to say to that point.
The book is called Wolf Hustle, A Black Woman on Wall Street, and it's by Sin. And I can never get these names right. It's Fabre, isn't it? Is it Faber, Fabre? How do I pronounce it?
All right. So, well, if you're in France, it's Fab. If yeah. you're in the U.S., it's Fabre. I look forward to the movie. You know, I can't wait to see what we do together, so how we create this movie. It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be absolutely amazing. It's been absolutely amazing to speak to you this morning, Sin. If people want to follow you on the social media, I know you've got an Instagram page because I'm looking at it right now. So where can people find you online or at your website?
Yeah, listen, I'm still bad at social media. I really don't do enough and I'm going to work on that. So apologies. It's Sin Fabre. You know, I need to talk to my kids more about getting a little bit better about that. But yeah. But guess what? You can just email me and I'll respond to that. I'm more of an old school person. I'm the type of person that'll still pick up a phone. I'm still emailing. I like stuff like that.
Well, it's been brilliant to speak to you. The book is called Wolf Hustle, A Black Woman on Wall Street. It's by Sin Fabre, or wherever you're coming from, or where you want to do it. Sin, it's been great to speak to you. Come back and talk to us when the movie is made, and we'll talk some more about that. Sin Fabre, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you.